Welcome to hour number two of the program for Friday, January 7th, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It is, of course, time for the Federal News Countdown. There are two landmarks that we're hitting on the Federal News Countdown. Before I tell you about those, I want to introduce my guest. Larry Allen is the founder of Allen Federal Business Partners and former head of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Larry, it's great to see you.
Great to be back on the show.
Happy New Year. Thank you for coming in today. Kim Peretti is director in the Forensic Services Practice for PricewaterhouseCoopers and formerly an official at the Justice Department. It's nice to see you again, Kim.
Thank you.
Happy New Year to you, too. Today is the first Federal News Countdown of the new year, obviously, so that's a big deal. But this is also the one-year anniversary of the Federal News Countdown. Started the very first Friday of 2010, and so this is the anniversary, and welcome to it, both of you.
I can see we've got the studio decked out with champagne.
Yeah, I wish I would have put a little more thought into it and make it a real anniversary show. You've chosen great stories, both of you. I'm looking forward to hearing all about them, and we'll start with
number three.
Third most important federal news story of the week, according to Larry Allen, is from Federal Computer Week. The headline is Google Wins, Interior Forbidden to Award Non-Competitive Contract to Microsoft. The Interior got a little bit ahead of themselves in this one, it sounds like.
Interior got a little bit ahead of themselves, Francis, in specifying a Microsoft solution for this specific procurement. The court told them that that was not competitive and that Interior has to go back to the drawing board and conduct a competitive procurement when there are alternate technologies out there. That's the surface part of this story. The real part behind it is that this is another time in the recent past where we've seen Google's name coming up in relation with federal government business. For a long time, Google had sat purposely on the sidelines of federal government business. Now, very quickly, we've seen two major stories coming up. This one this week in Federal Computer Week about their Interior court case win. At the end of 2010, it was GSA awarding Google mail services via Unisys for GSA's own email system. So now we see that Google suddenly wants to get into the government market. Mm-hmm. As I was saying to you earlier, headline could read, Google searches for government business.
Yeah. I don't think anybody should be surprised by the fact that Google wants into the federal market. They like money, obviously, and there's a lot of it to be made in the federal market. But I think what you were talking about and you and I were talking about earlier is how quick and how much muscle they're putting behind their effort to move into the market. That seems to be seem to fit with their MO when they move into market spaces. That's how they do it. So I guess maybe we shouldn't be surprised by their methodology either.
Well, not so surprised. They've got some senior level buy-in from their company. This comes from the top of their company. They also are making the best use that they have of the political context they have in the current administration. I don't mean to suggest by that there's anything untoward. That's actually a good strategy. If you've got that card in your playbook, you should definitely bring it out. But it shows that suddenly they're interested in the market, and the government, the senior leaders in this government, are very interested in them as well. And I think we're going to see a lot more from Google in terms of its federal market participation over the next year.
Larry Allen's story number three on the countdown is headlined, Google Wins, Interior Forbidden to Award Non-Competitive Contract to Microsoft. You can find it and all of the stories on our countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Kim Peretti, your story number three is headlined, University of Wisconsin Warns of Major Data Breach. I guess the silver lining for people inside government who are protecting data is it doesn't only happen to us. It happens in the private sector and in the nonprofit sector too.
Right. And I thought this was significant and picked it not only because it is my alma mater, born and raised in Wisconsin, but also because we're certainly familiar with these large data breaches at retailers, mm-hmm. TJX and Heartland, a couple of them, but not so much at universities. We haven't focused on or heard about it that much. But actually, historically, hackers have targeted universities for a long period of time, although early on, the purpose of targeting universities was they had vulnerable systems and they could compromise those systems and use them to launch attacks mm-hmm. on other systems. But now it seems that they've smartened up and have realized that universities are really treasure troves of sensitive data, personal data, social security numbers. We saw that in this case, and then we've seen it in previous cases recently. With the statistic here, I thought was really interesting. More than 2.3 million files have been breached in the United States, in United States colleges since 2008. That's
wow.
a large number.
It's a lot of stuff. The number that I thought was interesting in this was the number two. It appeared the hackers had unbridled access to the database for more than 2 years. I mean, when I talk to CIOs in government, they're talking about hours or days response time to when we have a breach and we're able to patch it in that short a period of time. Now, obviously, they didn't know about it for 2 years and not do anything. But, I mean, intrusion detection just must be non-existent at this level.
Well, and I wanted to point that number out as well, because that's actually very common, a common time period that we see for sophisticated criminals getting in systems and state-sponsored groups getting in systems and having unfettered access. It usually averages anywhere between 6 months and 2 years. So this is a little bit at one end, but if we had everyone, all companies in the private sector being able to detect these computer intrusions within days, mm-hmm. it would put the criminals out of business.
What is the combination in a situation like this of exceptional ability of the hacker and exceptional incapability of the victim to detect what's being done? Are the hackers really good, or are the defenses really bad, or is it some combination?
The hackers are really good. But what we need to do is focus more on our detection capabilities mm-hmm. because as an industry, companies have typically focused on how can I prevent these types of computer intrusions, and they've depended on antivirus software and other security technologies, and that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Criminals bypass that, and we've really never focused on shortening that time from when the compromise happens and we're aware of that compromise.
Kim Peretti, story number three is from eSecurity Plan. The headline is University of Wisconsin Warns of Major Data Breach. And you can see her story, read it, and read Larry Allen's stories at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. You can find them all posted there for you right now so you can follow along as we discuss them. We'll get to story number two from Kim Peretti and Larry Allen when In-Depth continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
A persistent problem facing all government agencies today is disposal of their confidential documents or other sensitive material. The best solution is turning your confidential files into energy. That's right, energy. Get clean and go green with Energy Recovery Operations on Aberdeen Proving Ground in Edgewood, Maryland. Since 1988, Energy Recovery has destroyed all sorts of government confidential records and magnetic media while producing energy. There is complete destruction. Do the green thing. Turn your government confidential records into energy. Go to energyrecoveryonline.com or call 410-679-6200. Your mission is possible. Stop identity theft. Burn your government-sensitive records. Log on to energyrecoveryonline.com or call 410-679-6200. That's energyrecoveryonline.com. This message will self-destruct in 3 seconds. 3, 2, 1.
If you only want to lose 5 or 10 vanity pounds, sorry, but we can't help you. But if you seriously want to lose 30 pounds or more because you're worried about health risks like diabetes, high blood pressure, or cholesterol, we can help you. And the trial is free when you call 1-800-600-7477 in the next 5 minutes. We're Sensa, and our revolutionary weight loss solution is clinically proven to help you lose 30 pounds or more. And now, for a limited time, you can try Sensa free for a full 30 days if you call the the toll-free number in the next 5 minutes. Senza is proven through science, but works like magic. In one of the largest weight loss studies of its kind ever conducted, more than 1,400 participants lost over 30 pounds on average with Senza, without changing their diet or exercise routine. If you're serious about losing weight and have more than 30 pounds to lose, call now for your free trial. Call 1-800-600-7477. 1-800-600-7477. That's 1-800-600-7477.
Profile America, Friday, January 7th. A little-remembered epic of human endurance ended on this day in 1887 as Thomas Stevens arrived in San Francisco, ending the first around-the-world trek on a bicycle. He left the city by the bay in the spring of 1884, riding a Columbia Standard bicycle, one of those with a huge front wheel and a tiny back wheel and no brakes. Stevens pedaled 13,500 miles as he crossed the world's mountains, deserts, and jungles. He wrote a classic book about his adventure around the world on a bicycle, republished a few years ago, and an incentive for today's bicyclists. Each year, more than 37 million Americans enjoy riding their bicycles. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon. The Federal Career Intern Program is designed to attract the best and the brightest to government. It's been controversial. Now it's being shut down. What does that mean for those efforts to hire the best and the brightest? And the number two at the FDA, well, he's leaving that post. It's been instrumental in performance transparency issues. We'll have an exit interview this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown this week with Kim Peretti of PricewaterhouseCoopers and Larry Allen of Allen Federal Business Partners. And we are up to
number two.
Larry Allen, your second most important federal news story of the week is from the New York Times. The headline, GOP sets up huge target for budget acts. And since it's Washington, there are a lot of people that are still skeptical that a lot of this budget cutting is ever going to happen. House can do it, or the Republicans can do it in the House if they want to, and it's not going to be quite so easy in the Senate.
Well, that's exactly right. This is a big target that the House Republicans have put up. Initially, it was $100 billion. Now, as of yesterday, $60 billion. What's significant about that, Francis, is I think that none of that envisioned by the House leadership includes cuts at the Department of Defense, and yet just earlier on your show today, we had Secretary Gates talking about the billions of savings that the Department of Defense has already identified. Some would say that that is getting DOD out in front of an anticipated congressional action that would look at ways to trim defense spending. So overall, we're talking about potentially spending or trimming spending on well over $130 billion worth of government programs. I think it's interesting to note that there is a degree of seriousness about this, particularly in the House. And unlike things like the health care bill, where they kind of need the Senate to go along or nothing can happen, conversely, the House can hold up anything on spending and budget itself if the Senate decides that it's going to ignore what the House does. So I think actually, if the House sticks to its game plan here, they've got a fairly realistic shot of trimming a fair amount of what they want to get trimmed, simply because otherwise it will be no spending bills that get passed anywhere, no budget bills.
You mean like the last couple of years? And I'm not picking on Democrats because the Republicans weren't any better at it. We've had CRs. We've been in CR land for the last, what, eight or 10 years?
And currently. We're on CR land until March 4th right now. But I think that while it's good to be skeptical, because we've been in Washington for a while, we know that not every campaign promise gets fulfilled. Nevertheless, if you are in a government agency, you probably are feeling the pain or will soon. If you're a government contractor, you're going to be feeling the pain because, hey, these are the things that I'm selling. I'm selling the goods and services to the government. In many cases, these are things the government's not going to be buying. I thought what was really interesting about the Secretary Gates press conference was that while his agency trimmed billions in spending, it wasn't just to go back to the Treasury.
Mm-hmm.
These are funds that are being reprogrammed. Where are they being reprogrammed? Well, they're being reprogrammed to things that are at the so-called tip of the spear,
mm-hmm.
warfighter support, things that are very materially linked to troops in the field, Air Force operations on the front lines, Navy operations on the front lines. I think, Francis, that we'll probably see that happen in the civilian agencies as well. It's not so much that everything is going to get trimmed. It's just that there's going to be a tremendous prioritization on what the core functions of each agency are, and anything that is second or third tier is what's going to be left out.
Mm-hmm. Kim, as you read these stories about budget cuts and so on and think about your experience at Justice, when you step back from the layer of people who are concerned directly about budget issues at each agency and think about running the part of Justice that you ran when you were there, what's the line of thinking that's going on there about how these kinds of budget things can affect me and my team of people?
Well, it's certainly, if you've worked for many years to get new positions open in your office and you have staff or potential hires in place, particularly when you get to more technical areas that you just can't all of a sudden, you really need to be looking for those hires over a period of time. It's not something that happens overnight.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, if the money's frozen, you can't expand and you've had initiatives underway for a long time. I mean, that's what's running through your head. Are we going to be able to carry out these important areas that it took us this long a period of time to get to?
Mm-hmm. The cynics around town are saying $100 billion, yeah, right. That'll happen. It's a nice goal to shoot for, I suppose, especially in light of what we've seen over the last 8 months to a year happening in Europe, where countries are a lot further along in the debt and deficit cycle than we are. So we've had the advantage of having a little bit of a preview to look at over there. But there are still a lot of people that are really skeptical about the likelihood of anything happening along this line.
Well, I think $100 billion is a nice goal to set, and it's a nice round figure that certainly gets you some good headlines. But what we have is we have over 90 brand new House members who've only been in office for about 3 or 4 days, Francis. When you start talking about what is coming out of those $100 billion, the projects that go back to the districts from which these people were elected and the jobs that are attendant to that money, I think that we inevitably will see that $100 billion target not be reached.
Mm-hmm.
I don't for a minute suggest that the folks who were elected to trim government spending are going to turn that off overnight. But I do think there is a little bit of a realization that factor that will come into play as people say, aha, well, that $100 million program that I thought was going to be on the chopping block, turns out that was responsible for employing 2,000 people in my district.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm not so eager to cut that after all.
That's right, and that's where I see the potential for nothing to happen at some point in time. The paragraph that I thought was most interesting in this story is on the third page of the printouts that you have there, toward the bottom. In new rules that the House is expected to adopt when it convenes on Wednesday, which they in fact did, Republicans will empower the incoming chairman of the House Budget Committee, Congressman Paul Ryan of Wisconsin, to set limits for the various categories of domestic spending that are decided in the Appropriations Committee. So essentially, the Appropriations Committee, who throughout the entire history of the United States has pretty much been able to set the top lines, will not be able to set the top lines anymore. It'll be up to Congressman Ryan and the Budget Committee to set the top lines, and then the Appropriations Committee, I don't want to say all they'll be able to do, because there's still a lot of power and autonomy in being able to determine how those top lines are spread around. But that's a significant change in the way that the committee structure operates as regards the budget.
It reasserts the power of the Budget Committee that we probably haven't seen in Congress really since the early to mid-1980s. When the Budget Committee was maybe still, at that point, only about 10 or 12 years old. And you're right, Francis. It does reconstitute the balance of power. And I think what's particularly significant about this is who is the chairman of this budget committee? Well, it's Congressman Ryan, a spending hawk, someone who, when he was in the minority for the last couple of years, was chomping at the bit to rein in federal spending. I think he's going to be a very tough taskmaster for appropriators to work with. And I think when we start getting down the line with individual spending projects and things that people want out of their Congress, Congressman Ryan is going to quickly become probably not nearly as popular with rank and file members as he might find himself now.
Yeah, when you actually have the axe instead of just potentially trying to grab for the axe, you become people tend to run from you rather than run toward you, it seems to me. Larry Allen's story number two on the countdown is headlined GOP Sets Up Huge Target for Budget Axe, and you can find it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The Federal News Countdown is on, and Larry Allen is on with me in addition to Kim Peretti of PricewaterhouseCoopers. Kim, we'll hear your story number two when we come back on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
NBC News Radio, I'm Tom Costello. The nation's unemployment rate has hit its lowest level in 19 months. President Obama announced the drop from 9.8 to 9.4%.
The economy added 1.3 million jobs last year, and each quarter was stronger than the previous quarter, which means that the pace of hiring is beginning to pick up.
Also today, the president added another economic veteran to his staff, tapping Gene Sperling to head the National Economic Council. Sperling held the same job during the Clinton administration. Other news, the British government has warned there has been a credible threat made by Al-Qaeda involving attack against a UK airport or other airline target. The British Transport Police say the public would not notice significant changes. Back home, the government is exercising new federal power over sales of cigarettes to minors, warning 25 Mississippi convenience stores to stop selling smokes to kids. The stores face possible penalties, including fines and seizure of products. I'm Tom Costello, NBC News Radio.
All right, sir, your new tires are all installed.
And how much do I owe you?
Let's see, 4 all-weather radials plus balance, alignment, and labor brings your total to $0.
Did you say zero?
Yep, it's free.
Thank you. From the bottom of my wallet.
Free is better. Do your simple federal return for free at TurboTax.com. It's free to prepare, free to print, and free to e-file. No wonder TurboTax is the most trusted brand of tax software in America. Visit TurboTax.com today. Trusted brand claim based on Intuit Commission Survey, August 2010.
Good news, ladies. Ugly brown spots on your skin might feel like they're the end of the world, but they're not. You can fade those brown spots from view with Dr. Perry's Night Skin Cream. New customers can try Night Skin Free. Diminish the appearance of brown spots on your face, neck, and hands. Try Night Skin Free. Call 1-800-509-4152. Pay only shipping and handling. One per household. Call for your free Night Skin. Call 1-800-509-4152. That's 1-800-509-4152.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Dell, and AVU Technologies. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down walls and enabling face-to-face communication, regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg, now a part of Cisco, developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at BreakDownTheWalls.com.
I'm not just some tall drink of water, you know. I mean, I wash your dishes, I do the laundry, I help put out fires. I'm always there when you need me, 24/7, at home, at work, just about anywhere. And I'm not expensive, but I have great taste. Well, I guess I am a tall drink of water, but I'm tap water, and that makes me special. For more information about what only tap water delivers, visit drinktap.org.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week features Larry Allen, formerly of the Coalition for Government Procurement, and now the founder and president of Allen Federal Business Partners, and Kim Peretti, a director in the forensic services practice at PricewaterhouseCoopers and a former senior counsel at the Justice Department. And Kim, your story number two in the countdown is from Treasury and Risk, and the headline is Beware Online Banking Thieves. Every time you come in, I get a little bit, I end the show on a little bit of a downer because there are all these people that are really, really smart and really, really evil figuring out ways to get a hold of my stuff.
Absolutely true. And we had even spoken about this particular attack last time I was here. And the reason I chose the article is because of it highlights what the financial services sector is doing to counter the attack, which is important. And often I think the banks aren't getting enough credit for what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But let's back up. And what is this attack? Basically, it's an attack on our online banking. Our online banking has been set up with the security of user authentication, username, password, token, you're into your online banking. And that has been compromised by cyber criminals starting about 18 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
They're more interested now in the small to medium-sized businesses because they're more vulnerable and they have a lot more money in their bank accounts than you or I do. And they've been successful at getting at the username, credentials, and other authentication of individuals and small to mid-sized businesses.
Mm-hmm.
But what's important here is what we're doing about it, and this article really highlights that. The financial services community for some time now has been collaborating together. The FSISAC has a corporate account takeover task force that's been out there developing best practices and prevention response detection of this particular type of crime. And some of the things that this article highlights is, first of all, there's software that you can download, you a consumer or a business, that will not allow this particular type of attack to happen. It sits in your browser, and if your browser is compromised, meaning when you type in your username and ID password, if the criminals are trying to get it, that software stops them from getting it. And then there's things that the banks are doing. They have possibilities. You can have dual controls for sending wires from your account. So it's not so easy for someone to automatically get a hold of your credentials and send unauthorized wires or ACH transfers.
Mm-hmm.
There's also software that the banks are using to monitor customers' online banking behaviors. So these are some of the things we saw that banks do to monitor credit card activity. And it took them many years to get there after credit cards were stolen. But they're working hard. There are things that are happening now to counter this attack.
I have a proposal for your former colleagues at Justice, and maybe the FTC should be involved and so on. I read this story, and it says an employee of Experimetal Inc., a manufacturer of specialty metal products in Sterling Heights, Michigan, opened an email that appeared to be from Comerica. It's banked for over a decade. The email said Comerica needed to perform maintenance work on its banking software and instructed EMI to log into a linked website. Everybody that's listening probably knows where this is headed.
Mm-hmm.
The employee logged in and provided the requested information, and it goes on to describe how this information was stolen. My proposal is, we play a ton of public service announcements on this radio station that have been provided by federal agencies. They do a lot of public affairs work throughout the country, trying to educate citizens about various things. I've never, ever heard one about personal cybersecurity. I think that somebody should come up with a dummy list. Hey, dummy, don't do this. Don't click on links that come in emails. Don't click on stuff. There's a whole lot, and you know them as well as I do. But it doesn't seem like there are that many different organizations that are getting in consumers' faces and saying, doing these following things are a really bad idea if you want to preserve the information of yourself and the people that you work for and work with.
I don't know if there's been radio ads, but there certainly have been a number of initiatives from the department and from the FTC, from private companies to educate customers about, you know, about getting emails and clicking on those attachments. There's been websites, all kinds of numerous types of initiatives. Mm-hmm. It's just, I've heard about it certainly. It's just getting consumers to listen and be, you know, before they click on it, stop and think an extra minute.
It's got to be frustrating for the IT folks because it's the same stuff over and over and over again.
Right,
people
it is.
People still keep doing these dumb behaviors.
And if you think about it, the financial sector has taken a big hit about this cyber attack. But their systems aren't being compromised. The point of compromise is the customer's systems.
Yeah. Kim Peretti, your story number 2 on the countdown this week is Beware Online Banking Thieves. And I think there are some best practices here for helping people in government to understand what's going on both at the financial services industry level, but also, as we're talking about here, the end user level, to be aware that some of these behaviors that you would think would be going away after a while continue despite the various efforts to educate people about what's going on. Kim Peretti, story number 2, posted now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And you can find all of our stories on the countdown this week, including story number 1 from Larry Allen and Kim Peretti. We'll hit those when the Federal News Countdown continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Listen next week for a special edition of the Business of Government Hour's Conversation with Authors series, exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness. What are the benefits of regulatory partnerships? How can new approaches to public-private partnerships enhance food safety? Join host Michael Keegan as he profiles 3 IBM Center reports and explores these questions and more with authors Russ Mills, Cassandra Mosley, Professors Noel Grease, and Monica Noguera. Next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Profile America, Friday, January 7th. A little-remembered epic of human endurance ended on this day in 1887 as Thomas Stevens arrived in San Francisco, ending the first around-the-world trek on a bicycle. He left the city by the bay in the spring of 1884, riding a Columbia Standard bicycle, one of those with a huge front wheel and a tiny back wheel and no brakes. Stevens pedaled 13,500 miles as he crossed the world's mountains, deserts, and jungles. He wrote a classic book about his adventure around the world on a bicycle, republished a few years ago, and an incentive for today's bicyclists. Each year, more than 37 million Americans enjoy riding their bicycles. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Plan now to attend a firm's January 20th luncheon to discuss how government is going green. Learn how to comply with administration requirements that 95% of government's electronic products be energy efficient, and hear from the White House and other policy officials how sustainability will impact all future acquisitions. Join a firm on Thursday, January 20th at 11:30 a.m. in the G.W. Marvin Center in Washington, D.C. Register today at www.affirm.org. Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're on the Federal News Countdown. The 3 most important federal news stories of the week is chosen by Larry Allen, founder of Allen Federal Business Partners, and Kim Peretti, a director in the forensic services practice at PricewaterhouseCoopers. And we're up to
number 1.
The most important federal news story of the week is chosen by Kim Peretti is entitled Fake White House Holiday Email is Cyber Attack. Here we go again. The same thing that we talked about in the last segment. We talked about it during the break. people keep doing the same stupid stuff over and over again. It's maddening.
It is maddening. And why I picked this is because, you know, in conjunction with the previous article, it really shows that the main method of infiltration into our systems continues to be phishing and the spear phishing. This is the way they're getting into systems. And it's a big concern. We really need to create a culture of suspicion. Because if you can stop them from getting into the system, you can stop them from getting information out of your system. And these types of attacks on government systems are even more difficult or more to be of more concern, because at least if they're going after online banking credentials, we know what their motive is. We can understand what they're after and what they're going to do with the information. But in this particular type of attack, what is their motive? Who is behind trying to get sensitive data from particular law enforcement agencies related to criminal cybercrime activities? Who, if it were successful and they got that information, who's going to be going through it? What are they going to do with it? I think it's really an interesting point of what's the purpose of that attack.
A little commentary, I guess, on the media coverage of this event. The fourth paragraph in this story says the targeted email attack comes as the federal government is desperately trying to beef up its cybersecurity after the release of thousands of State Department cables and military documents by the WikiLeaks website. Federal authorities want to improve technology systems and crack down on employees to prevent the theft or loss of classified and sensitive information. And yet, this story doesn't have anything to do with WikiLeaks and doesn't have anything to do with the ongoing effort of agencies to try to protect the information they have. The only connection that I saw is the fact that whoever started this wanted it to look like it was coming from the White House, but that's even rather tangential to me, it seems. So I'm always interested not only in the issue of cybersecurity, but in how it's covered and how people are understanding it and perceiving the information that they're getting. We talked a little bit about the behavior element of this, Kim, in the last segment, but at what point can we say people should really know better? I mean, these people are going to keep doing these things as long as they work.
Right. I think it's a combination of people should know better, but also understanding that I had more of that attitude when I started at the Justice Department 8 years ago when the fishes had misspellings.
Mm-hmm.
But they've refined over time that I must admit there's been some that have come across my email inbox, and I've almost clicked on them. They target some sort of natural instinct quickly to open. Some of them are directed at, you've been the victim of a sexual harassment claim, here's some information.
Mm-hmm.
And it creates this automatic instinct to click on it. So they're becoming trickier and trickier. It's almost like they're being taught by behavioral specialists. So we have to, you know, at some point think, maybe they will be so good and so clever. I mean, some of them come from even your friends. I've seen some spear phishing that you were at a recent conference and they know you were at that conference and the email comes in, nice to meet you at that recent conference. Here's that information you were looking for.
Wow.
And at some point, I don't know how much we can expect from end users not to click on this.
Is it reasonable for people to just adapt a non-clicking policy where if it's in an email, I'm just not going to click on it, even if you're sending it to me? Because as you say, I mean, I've gotten messages from people who I know because their computers have been infected with Trojans or whatever they're called, with malware. And so it looks like it's coming from Larry Allen. And by the way, stop doing that. I'm just kidding. And so, if it's coming from Larry Allen, of course, that he would never send me anything bad.
Maybe we'll see that in the evolution of the internet. I know I personally am. I do not click on anything or open anything. Anytime I'm curious, I never open it. It's only when I know who it's from, mm-hmm. and the heading matches exactly with what I'm expecting to receive. So maybe over time, that's the place that we need to get to mm-hmm. and create that level of suspicion so people understand it.
I do want to be clear because I'm teasing you, Larry. The only video that you've ever sent me that I clicked on was that Susan Boyle video with the message, "This made me cry." And I did say at one point I wouldn't mention that on the air, so
Susan
I apologize
Boyle's
for
big
that.
Fan,
yeah.
So.
Who's not? Kim Peretti, your story number one is fake White House holiday email is cyber attack, and you can read the whole thing at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, although I promise to never send you an email and ask you to click on it to read that story. It's posted right on the website. Larry Allen's story number one is up next when the Federal News Countdown continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What's next for cell phones? Fancy editing of high-quality video? Data mining? Not yet, unless you want to carry around very bulky equipment. Your cell phone may do a lot of cool stuff, but its batteries, processor, and memory can't compete with your desktop computer.
The more complex you get with your expectations, the more requirements your applications have on the phone's resources.
Petros Maniatis, an Intel researcher, points to security as an example. He says a virus scan performed within your smartphone would take way too long and gulp power. The solution may lie in so-called cloud computing, where data is beamed
off to a cloud somewhere, to a server machine sitting somewhere far away, and you do the scanning there. So it takes energy, but it doesn't take the energy from your battery.
There are still engineering challenges to syncing cloud with phone, but you may one day carry the power of thousands of desktops in your pocket. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Did you know that if you're a woman over 40, you need to work out at least an hour a day just to maintain your current weight? An hour at the gym every day without losing a pound? That's ridiculous. Hi, I'm Steve Bostic, president of Right Size Smoothies, and when I heard that, I was shocked, because I know that if you feed your body right, you can lose weight in no time. That's why I'm going to let anyone who calls today try my weight loss smoothies for 2 full weeks. I'll even personally guarantee that you'll see the weight fall right off. To claim your 2-week trial, call now and receive free shipping and handling. The number is 1-800-400-0861. And now I've made my smoothies even better, because I'm going to guarantee the first 100 callers a 2-week weight loss trial. I'll even include free shipping and handling, plus my revolutionary blender bottle, absolutely free. But you have to call 1-800-400-0861. That's 1-800-400-0861.
You hear the sounds of hammers and saws, but it's also the sound of freedom and independence. Across America, people are supporting Homes for Our Troops build specially adapted homes for our severely injured veterans. Now, it's your turn to help Sergeant Stephen Kiernan, who lost both legs while serving in Iraq. He volunteered to protect our freedom. You can volunteer your time, donate materials, or make a cash donation to this effort. Visit homesforourtroops.org or call 866-7-TROOPS.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown. As every Friday at 2 o'clock, we count down the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by our panel of experts. And this week it's Kim Peretti of PricewaterhouseCoopers, formerly at the Justice Department, and Larry Allen of Allen Federal Business Partners. And Larry, your story number one's from GovExec. The headline is, "Incoming House Oversight Chair Pledges Hard Line on Waste." There seems to be a bit of a showdown on the House Oversight Committee being set up here. Darrell Issa has been the presumptive chair since it appeared and then became the case that Republicans are taking over in the House of Representatives. He's been the ranking member on that committee for a number of years. one of the reasons that the former chairman, Ed Towns, is no longer the ranking member, the top Democrat on that committee, is because he was perceived, at least by his delegation, as not being tough enough necessarily to stand up to Darrell Issa the way that Henry Waxman did when Dan Burton and Tom Davis headed that committee. What do you see potentially at play here in the House Oversight Committee for the agencies as this oversight really gins up?
Well, a couple of things, Francis. First of all, Darrell Issa, when he was the ranking Republican, even when the Republicans were in the minority in the House, had already garnered himself the nickname as the administration's antagonist in chief.
Mm-hmm.
He has done nothing during this transition period when he's now chair of the House Oversight Committee to slack that off or make anybody think that he's going to do anything different. In fact, we know that he has a fully staffed cadre of investigators and has already laid out a very ambitious oversight schedule, doing many oversight hearings himself and having other people who are at the subcommittee level do their own oversight hearings. It's very clear from this press account and from others where Congressman Issa hasn't only taken on people like Eric Holder, the attorney general, and saying, you know, you better clean up your act, Mr. Mm-hmm. Attorney General. He also last weekend was talking about the president. The president better watch himself. Well, you know, a House committee chair can be a very popular person, but, you know, the president probably has a couple of trump cards himself.
Yeah, he has some decent attorneys working for him, I understand.
Yeah, exactly. So I think Issa is going to use this chairmanship in a way very similar to former Chairman Waxman, who chaired this committee during the last part of the Bush administration, and going further back, Congressman Dan Burton, who chaired this committee during the Clinton administration, where all of these chairs have used this pulpit as a way to embarrass the administration that's in power, to call them on the carpet for fraud, waste, and abuse, and to make sure that senior administration officials are tied in knots responding to information requests. Interestingly, in the House of Representatives, this is the only chairmanship that I'm aware of that carries with it the subpoena power.
Mm-hmm.
Again, when Congressman Waxman was chair, he made no hesitancy of either using that or the specter of using that to bring Bush administration officials up to the Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Congressman Issa, I think, is going to make Congressman Waxman look tame by comparison in that.
A couple of quotes from this story that Jeremy Jacobs had in the National Journal, first off, that I thought were interesting. Issa said the White House should hire more accountants, not lawyers, in preparation for the investigations. Kim isn't a lawyer. What is that? What do you think of that?
Interesting.
That idea, I think, is pretty interesting in that he appears to at least be saying that he wants to know more about the numbers than potential problems, legal problems. But this is the one that struck me the most. Congressman Cummings said on CNN's State of the Union, "We're going to do it in a bipartisan way here if Mr. Issa cooperates." I thought Darrell Issa was going to be setting the agenda and leading the way that this committee goes.
Well, he is very much, but as you alluded to in your intro of this topic, Congressman Cummings, the new ranking Democrat on this panel, became ranking Democrat strictly because he told Congressman Issa, in essence, bring it on.
Mm-hmm.
He is, his position is going to be the defender of the administration and its priorities on this panel. And I think while he may cooperate with Congressman Issa on some things, I think that he will be a very active foil to him on others.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be an interesting committee. I would be willing to bet that better than 9 out of 10 people outside of Washington don't even know that there is a House Oversight Committee, but they probably will within the next 6 months or so, because it's one that's going to get a high degree of visibility and one where there are going to be a lot of senior administration officials making their way to that end of Pennsylvania Avenue. That, on top of the fact that Republicans have now said they're going to post all of their hearings on YouTube for everybody to view, we're going to have quite a broad audience potentially for this type of oversight. I think that a little oversight's a good thing. A little oversight, I think, Francis, goes a long way. So I don't mean to suggest that Congressman Issa is not focusing on an area where he shouldn't be focusing. I think we need to root out fraud, waste, and abuse. We need to make sure that everybody's getting good value for their taxpayer dollars. And I think he'll do that. My concern is that with any type of ardency or stridency of this nature, inevitably there are good programs that get caught up in the undertow, and some of the good things that they're doing may be lost depending on the context in which the committee looks at the overall function of the agency.
Mm-hmm. Kim, as you look at what the Oversight Committee is responsible for and think about your time at Justice, what inside an agency, what are people thinking about when they see what when their number comes up, I guess, in a committee like this, and they know they've got to go and essentially defend what they're doing and justify their existence?
Right, and you certainly never want to be the target of it. It's the time when you quickly are cleaning up everything and making sure you are dotting your I's and crossing your T's, and certainly in investigations and prosecutions, scrutiny over how it's happening, there's the way it happens and then the way it's supposed to happen. So never want to be that target.
The bottom line is that this will make people at agencies nervous, I think, over at least the next 3 or 4 months till we get a sense of where Congressman Issa wants to take this committee and what he wants to do.
Oh, I think definitely nervous and definitely going to have an impact on some of the day-to-day operations. Some of that will be good. Some of it, we'll have to see.
Speaking of good, a good federal news countdown. No, a great federal news countdown this week. I appreciate you folks being here. Larry Allen is the founder of Allen Federal Business Partners and former head of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Kim Peretti, director of the Forensic Services Practice at PricewaterhouseCoopers. Great stories, as always. Great to see you. Happy New Year and happy one-year anniversary to the federal news countdown. You can hear the whole thing at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later on this afternoon, and you can read all of the stories that we talked about on the show today right now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The Dorabeck Insider up next between 3 and 7 this afternoon. I'm back with a brand new In-Depth on Monday and a new Federal News Countdown next Friday at 2 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.